Want to get the most out of the tread on your tires? Burt Brothers is offering a free alignment check and $20 off any oil change. Book your next service online today or stop by any Burt Brothers location near you and let them get your car ready for the adventure ahead. Burt Brothers, complete auto care done better.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back.
Welcome back.
Oh, yeah, man, how you doing?
Come on, you come good? On,
I know you like
on.
That.
Welcome back.
I know you like that.
How long you been back, man?
Welcome into the Saturday Show, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Saturday morning. My name is Jay Catch, joined as always by Michelle Bodkin. Michelle, how are you?
We're doing good.
That's good.
Yeah.
It's football season.
It is football season.
Week two of the Utah prep season is in the books. I was out at East High School last night calling Skyridge and East, and every time I go to East High School, I'm reminded they have one of the better like settings in terms of just a stadium look. Obviously, you've been to Rice Eccles. Mm-hmm. You know, it looks about over the Salt Lake Valley.
Yeah.
Well, if you want a high school one that has that same kind of a look, like Judge Memorial, East High, they have those same like kind of, you look back across the valley.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, they're in the same general vicinity. You can throw a stone from any one of them and hit the other.
Right,
so
there, yeah.
They're all right there.
Yeah, so it was fun to be out there last night. We got a lot of football to talk about ahead on today. Should we even have some Utah Jazz news? The schedule's out.
What?
Yeah, we know when the Jazz are going to be playing this season. So if you are one of those people who's trying to figure out if you're going to buy an antenna or you're going to go with the streaming service that they've announced, well, now you know when the games are going to happen. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Scott Gerard is going to join us from Utah State Scrimmage up in Logan. They're up at Maverick Stadium today. So he's going to join us approximately 11 o'clock. To talk about the Aggies, get his insight on that, because very interesting year ahead for Utah State.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like almost like a prove-it year in a way for Blake Anderson. Just so much turnover. I don't know if you saw this, Michelle. I think it was 10 of their 11 defensive starters either graduated or transferred after last season.
Wow.
So they've had...
I know there's been some issues and some rumblings and general not great feelings about Utah State.
Yeah, so they've got plenty to work on their end, so we'll get into that, and obviously we'll just have some fun along the way. We got technical fouls, some of our staples here on the show, so we'll get to all that. But let's start off this week as we typically do. Let's get everybody's highlight of the week. By the way, we got Christian producing for us today. What's up, Christian?
Not much. Happy to be here.
Yeah, you got a highlight of the week?
Yeah.
Still being married after, like, what, are we 3 weeks in now?
A month.
Month in. Oh,
month.
Hey.
Yes.
The first month is actually very important.
It was fun. It's been great.
Good.
So far.
All
yeah.
Right.
And so Wednesday morning, my wife and I took our dog and we went on a little hike down here.
Nice.
By the Capitol building. There's like
a little
park.
Oh, yeah. That's
beautiful.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
There's a little trail that goes up by a little creek and stuff. And our dog went and walked in the water. Super fun. Great to get out, go on a little hike. So that was probably the highlight of our week.
I like that. Michelle?
That's a pretty area.
Yeah.
I agree. That's a great place to be. Nothing too terribly interesting happened, but it was a good week, I would say.
Well, most of my highlights come through my kids, as you guys have realized on the show. My daughter is doing gymnastics and cheer. She got her back walkover this week, finally. She's been
working
dying
hard
to
at
get it done. So she finally accomplished that this week, and she was just ecstatic about it. So
that's a big deal.
It is
for young cheerleaders. That's like a really really big step.
You know, that was not something I ever picked up. So
she's she's already more athletic than I ever was. Let's just put it that way. No, it was pretty cool to see her do that. She also started. She's in first grade. She had her first couple days of school this week, and she came over for the first day because she was a full day now. Oh, you okay?
Yeah, we're good. We're good.
That sounded like that hurt. But she comes home after the first day. I'm like, okay, so how was school? She's like, that was long.
Oh, get used to it, baby girl.
Exactly. I was like, well, here's what it's going to be. So
this is what it's going to be for the rest of your life until you retire.
Yeah, it was funny because she had like half day preschool and half day kindergarten.
Uh-huh.
And she comes home at like 3:30. I'm like, how was the first day of school? She's like, it was fun. But it was long.
It was long.
So,
yeah.
I couldn't help but laugh. I'm like, yeah, well welcome, yeah. Welcome to life. So kind of funny, made me chuckle. All right. Well, let's actually get into the meat and potatoes portion of today's program. Let's talk some college football. We've got we're under 2 weeks to Utah. Mm-hmm. We are 2 weeks away from BYU. We are 1 week away from week zero games, Michelle.
Woo!
So it's coming fast. Let's talk a little bit about that. Let's get to what's the big deal.
Do you know who I am?
No, I can't say that I do.
I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal.
Really?
People know me.
I'm very happy for you.
I'm very important. I have many leather-bound books, and my apartment smells of rich mahogany.
All right, Michelle. So as I mentioned, we are 12 days away from Utah kicking off against Florida, 14 days away from BYU and Sam Houston State. It's also 14 days for Utah State in Iowa, going out to Iowa City to take on the Hawkeyes. We do have one team, if I'm not mistaken, next week. Christian, you know this. Is Southern Utah playing next week, or are they 2 weeks out?
I'm not certain. Let me check Google.
Yeah, well, I just
gotta Google it.
Somebody told me that Southern Utah was playing next week. I was like, I'm not sure that they play next week. I thought they were 2 weeks out themselves. So, they play Thursday. So they're 12 days away. So they play Arizona State.
Same time as Utah.
Yeah. So, exciting to know that that's firmly on the horizon.
Right.
Here, and it's coming pretty quick. And I wanted to start off, Michelle, there's been a lot when it comes to Utah about the quarterback situation. We discussed that last week. Brandon Rose looks like he's going to be out. There is still the – Kyle Whittingham said at Pac-12 Media Day it's going to come down to the wire on Cam Rising in terms of him getting cleared. So where do you stand right now on everything with Utah? You feeling like they're tracking well considering the quarterback situation?
Yeah, I think overall they're tracking well. The one thing they have going for them is I think they have enough returning talent that they can manage without Cam Rising if they have to.
Okay.
For a game or two. Now, if it starts getting into like the whole season, then we're, you know, I think it's going to get brutal. But like a game or two, especially out of the gate, I think, you know, they can rely on the running back room a little bit. It sounds like they have some good pass catchers that maybe can help alleviate and make things a little bit easier for whoever steps in.
Okay.
But I mean, obviously you want your best players out there no matter what. And Cam is their best player at quarterback right now. That's just fact.
Yeah, you'd be hard pressed to argue against that. Let's just put it that way.
Right, right.
So that's the nice part about it is that, I'm with you. I think that they've got the talent to hold up again. And I get nothing against Florida, but they just look like they're very much a team that is not.
They're a team in flux.
Sure, that's a good way to say
they're
it.
They're a team in flux. I think they certainly have the talent if it comes together. But that's kind of the problem and the issue I'm seeing, at least right now, and at least that's kind of how it feels like it's being reported, is there's just a lot of stuff up in the air. They're having a lot of issues. They're having a lot of problems. And then you have to travel out west, and then you have to deal with the elevation, which I don't want to get into arguments about humidity versus elevation. Yep. Like, the bottom line is they're both hard elements to deal with when you're not used to them. And so, you know, that's something that Florida is going to have to contend with. And it's also a matter of, you know, the devil you don't know. SEC country has never traveled out west. They don't know. They don't really know about Rice Eccles. And yes, it's not as big as a lot of the venues that they're used to and all that kind of stuff. But pound for pound, like it's a pretty ruckus place and they bring it. So it's kind of a perfect storm, I think, of I don't know how well it's going to go for them. And then you have, like, the Utah defense that's kind of come out and said, like, they're very motivated to get off to a much quicker, better start against this Florida team because they looked bad against them last year. Like, there's no two ways about it. I think it was, like, what, 49 missed tackles or 48 missed tackles last year in that first game, which is just unheard of. That was almost double what Utah usually has in a bad game. So it's, you know, there's just a lot of stuff going on. I think Utah can manage it as long as they play a really good game and everybody picks up some of the slack. If slack has to be picked up, if slack doesn't have to be picked up, then I think it's also probably a very different story.
Well, sure, and I would agree with all of that. The other thing about this game's shaping up to be what I call a Kyle Whittingham special.
Yeah.
Where his defense goes out, and trust me, that defense for Utah looks absolutely loaded. Like, mm-hmm. I'm just talking bodies, returning talent, added talent, like guys like Miles Battle coming in here. They've got all the pieces, it feels like, where they go out there and Kyle says, hey, guys, shut them down.
Yeah.
And then he turns to the offense, and if it is Bryson Barnes, mm-hmm. he turns to him and says, Bryson, don't turn the ball over.
Right.
Pick up first downs when you need to, and then you have the Steelers running backs behind you, Glover, Jaquindon Jackson, Mekhi Bernard, yeah. Chris Curry. Feed them the rock.
Yeah, you use them how you see fit, which means a lot.
Yeah, so that screams to me, if they are going to have to absorb not playing with Cam Rising for that game, or at least maybe first, however many in the first part of the season, mm-hmm. it feels like this goes back to kind of Kyle Whittingham's whole MO as a head coach. Defense shuts down the opponents, and you do enough to win football games. Because mm-hmm. I think you and I are in agreement on this, Michelle. What do people care about most in football? Their team having more points than the other team at the end of the day.
Right. It doesn't have to be beautiful, especially early in the season. Like, everybody's kind of getting back into the feel and the flow of it.
Especially with transfer portal in effect now. There's so many bodies changing teams now.
Yes. So, you know, if it's a little more slugfesty than we're used to it being after the last few years with how the offense has operated, I think they'll be fine. Like, mm-hmm. I really think they'll be fine. And the other thing about it too. I know a lot of people are up in arms about Bryson Barnes like starting. The fact of the matter is we've never seen him come out when the game plan has been specifically for him and the prep work has been all about him.
Yeah.
Like even that Washington State game, he found out 20 minutes before. I think he got a few reps through the week just in case, like a few extra ones, but not
you do that because he's a backup quarterback.
But not in the sense that he was prepared like he was going to be the starter. Yeah. They thought Cam was going to start that game.
Trust me, Petros Papadakis won't let it die.
No. He's still angry and yelling into a microphone somewhere about that. But
I'm just saying. He will never let that one go.
But I'm curious to see. And look, here's the thing. Bryson is not going to look like Cam Rising. He's not.
No, he's
like,
not the same player.
He's not the same player. He doesn't have the same skill set. But I think the fact that Utah trusts him, there has to be a reason why they trust him. And I don't get to see, you know, what goes on in practice. Most of those fans don't get to see what's going on in practice. So there's a reason why there's confidence in him. Do I think some of the guys behind him have a higher ceiling? Yeah. But if they're not ready yet, if they're not in a place where they can be trusted
or physically be ready to play in the case of Brandon Rose.
Exactly. Then, you know, why roll the dice on something that you're not sure is going to work? Go with the sure thing. And I think Bryson is the sure thing.
And that right there, I think, is kind of the point to be made, is that you trust what you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing with Cam is he's an electric football player. Bryson has come in, as you mentioned, in multiple spots, that Rose Bowl, the game against Washington State. When he's been forced into action, he's mm-hmm. responded well.
Mm-hmm.
And I also really like your point. I hadn't even really considered what you just said, is that this is going to be the first time, if it comes to this,
mm-hmm.
like there is still a chance Cam could get cleared. Trust me, that could still happen. But it could come to it where Andy Logan says, okay, Bryson, you're the guy. We're formulating a game plan around you. What will that do for that young man? It could really unlock something for him.
I think it would help him out a little bit because he's been put into some really, really bad situations.
Yeah.
And for the most part, has handled it well. That last Rose Bowl maybe was not the best, but like at some point, it's going to catch up with you, right?
Sure.
Like,
yeah. You know? Can't walk into every single game and go and throw a touchdown pass. Was it the first play you threw? Yeah.
Yeah. It was like the first or second play when he came in. Yeah. Like it just doesn't always happen that way. It just doesn't, especially again when you're throwing someone in cold and they're not being practiced like they're going to be the starter. Like it's just at some point it does catch up to you, and it caught up to them in that last Rose Bowl. But like I said, I'm willing to entertain, you know, what does he look like
mm-hmm.
when they've catered to and planned around him and his skill sets rather than it's been about Cam, but Bryson's had to come in for Cam. I think people will be a little more pleasantly surprised. Maybe not have their minds blown. You know, I'm not saying or suggesting that, but I think when you work around, you know, the actual person and what they can do, it shows better. It just does.
Well, and that's the interesting part about how it's ultimately all going to shake out, because I want to flip the conversation and go down to Provo, not New York, like one Big 12 player thought BYU was in. Did you see that video, by the way?
So, I saw something floating around, but someone really thought BYU was in New York.
So they did, I think it was from Big 12 Media Day, they did like different players. Like, do you know where BYU's located? And the coaches, to their credit, most of the coaches they had on there were like, Provo, Utah. One kid, Lokahi, he's a Polynesian kid from Hawaii who plays for UCF.
No.
He's like, Salt Lake City? I don't like cities in Utah. They tell him it's in Provo. He's like, bleep. I should have known that. But there was one dude, I don't remember which team it was. He's like, where's BYU? Is it in New York?
Another player thought it was a city called Brigham Young.
Oh, yeah. He's like, is it Brigham Young? They're like, no, that's the name of the school. He's like, oh.
Well, I mean, in fairness, we do have a Brigham, Utah, too.
Yeah,
but hey.
Born and raised.
We have Brigham City's finest right here.
Yes.
Christian Esparza.
Oh, I did not know that. How funny.
Born and raised.
Box yep. Elder B over there.
Hey. Yeah, no. In fairness, we do have a Brigham City.
Yeah.
But wrong.
Yeah. It made me chuckle that video because it was most of them got it, Provo, Utah. One kid was like, I don't know. It was really funny video. You have to watch it in the break or something.
That makes me so sad.
So, but that brings me kind of the conversation now we're having. But it flips over to the defense for BYU. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the defense for BYU was not very good a year ago. You look at the metrics, they were second to last in team sacks. The only team worse than them in sacks last year was the Colorado Buffaloes.
Yeah, that's not a company you want to keep.
You were 130th out of 131 teams in team sacks a year ago. Your pass efficiency rate, like everything, was 90th or worse in all the defensive metrics last year for BYU. It just fell off a cliff.
Yeah, it did.
It necessitated a change, obviously. Jay Hill comes in, and I've got to say, what I've seen from Jay Hill so far is very encouraging, but a big playmaker for BYU's defense went down due to injury this week, Micah Harper.
Mm-hmm.
Tore his ACL, and that's the reporting out there, and unfortunate for him because it's the second time he's torn his ACL in his career. He did that at the tail end of the 2020 season, the pandemic-stricken year, and then that cost him all of 2021.
Yeah.
He came back to play last year and really became a nice playmaker for this BYU defense. But it's kind of going back to the point where it's on defense for BYU where they need to respond and they need to have some playmakers. Losing a guy of this caliber is absolutely going to put a damper on that. They're going to have to find a way to go around that. And I'm curious, similar to what you're talking about with Utah, is how is Jay Hill going to adapt with this?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's been building this, and it's been their safety tandem. We've been out there, I think, as a media group, I think it's about six times we've been able to see about 20 to 25 minutes worth of practice. So we've seen some of it. But when we've seen the number one safeties, it was Micah Harper and Malik Moore. Like, they have never not, like,
been number one.
Yeah. So losing a guy like this, especially on a defense that it's going to rely, as you know, the Utah defense, it's a single high safety look. It's just kind of what Kyle Whittingham's hallmark is. BYU, trust me, I go watch their defense. I'm like, okay, it's Utah. Like it's a lot of the same elements, and for good reason.
Right.
Kalani Sitake, Jay Hill, grew up working underneath in the coaching business, working for Kyle Whittingham. They know what he does. This is going to affect BYU because I'm not sure they have a like-for-like replacement on the roster right now for Micah Harper. Because he was a guy that, you know, in that Utah defense, guys like Cole Bishop, they're a safety, but they walk up into that box often to help with run support. Micah Harper's not as big as a Cole Bishop, but he was that guy.
Mm-hmm.
He would kind of walk up into the box, and he is a fearless tackler.
Okay.
He puts his head in there, and he gets after it.
Goes for it.
Yeah. That's the issue now that I'm wondering how BYU now adjusts for that. They have 2 weeks, obviously, to get ready for this.
Right.
This injury actually happened last Saturday during their scrimmage. So they'll have 3 weeks, in theory, to get ready for it. But it kind of goes back to the point we were just talking about. You need to make adjustments, and how will you adjust to this?
Well, and we've talked about this before, too. The one thing that BYU cannot have happen is injuries to key players. And
sure,
just had one happen.
Yeah, and that's the one
it's the only one so far. So relatively so, clean.
So far, yeah. Yes. But like, I'm sure, like, I don't know for sure, but I would have to imagine that Klonny, A-Rod, and Jay are all going, ugh.
Stay healthy, like, guys. Stay healthy, guys.
Yeah, like, okay, we've had one. Like, let's not do this a couple more times. Like, come on, guys. Uh-huh. You know, because they've seen what happens early on in a move like that. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't doubt that BYU's ones and maybe some of their twos can go with anyone in the Big 12. But if you start getting into your twos and threes and even your fours, which is what happened to Utah in mm-hmm. the first couple of years, it's just different.
And that's the thing. And I've got to say, the other thing about this is BYU's training camp is one of the most physical I can remember in recent memory. Jay Hill has brought the whole mentality of, okay, this defense, we've got to hit people. Mm-hmm. Like, we just actually have to practice it.
Well, and Utah just barely had a little resurgence of that, too, because of what happened last year early in the season. You've got to practice it. Otherwise, you're going to whiff.
And you run risks of injury. In Utah's case, Brandon Rose. In this case, Michael Harper goes down. But that's the thing about this is to BYU, you're right. They've done a pretty diligent – they put a diligent effort into trying to go out and establish extra depth. Aaron Roderick said to the media earlier this week, he thinks that offensively, he says, we upgraded every position this offseason. And mm-hmm. what he meant by that, I think, is, yes, the ones for BYU traditionally can go toe-to-toe.
Totally. Totally, we've seen it.
The issue is when you drop down to, you mentioned the twos and the threes, that's where the talent disparity starts to manifest itself. And he said that we've upgraded every position, and that is encouraging because that means that the transfer portal work that they did, they mm-hmm. brought in, I think BYU, the final tally last I saw of newcomers to the BYU football program was 58 this year.
Right.
On a 123-man roster. Like, almost half the roster was turned over. But they expect that talent to step up. I'm just worried on the defensive side of things with this Michael Harper deal mm-hmm. is Jay Hill's talked about as we're going to have to find answers this season when it comes to our roster and find guys who are playmakers. Losing a guy like this is one of those playmakers I would have put like near the top of the list. Like, Michael Harper, playmaker. Mm-hmm. Now you have to adjust to that. That's the big question because you can't absorb too many of these hits.
Mm-hmm. And to your point, I think, you know, BYU's offense really has not been the issue.
No.
So, yeah, it is more about they probably did focus their attention on who can we bring in that's going to be a better two for us? Who can we bring mm-hmm. in that's going to be a better three for us? But the defense, as you mentioned earlier, was a mess last year. And so, yeah. I mean, you kind of blew it up and you're starting over mm-hmm. again. And that kind of means you're really focused on getting some decent ones in, and maybe the twos and the threes aren't quite where they need to be yet. That's going to be, you know, a year or two process probably to get that up where it needs to be. But so, yeah, like when you start having an injury like that, I'm sure Jake was over there clenching his teeth going, ugh. like, okay, we can absorb the one, mm-hmm. right? Like, you can absorb one or two. You start having injuries across the board at key places or entire position groups wiped out.
Correct.
Yikes.
And that's the interesting thing about this, because both these programs, as you mentioned, they want to avoid the slow starts when it comes to missed tackles and that type of stuff by getting in and tackling. And trust me, what I've seen with my own eyes at BYU is there is a lot more hitting going mm-hmm. on just in general. And it may not be full-on tackling to the ground, but we're talking like thud practices, just getting physical. I haven't seen that in a couple of years for BYU. And Utah's doing the same thing because I think that they realize, hey, we started slow last year because we didn't hit as much. And that's the balance you're going to have to strike here as these programs. Getting enough of that where the guys don't go out there. And what did you say? It was like somewhere around 50 missed tackles. It was a lot.
Yeah, it was
a lot.
I watched that game. It was
very atypical.
It was crazy. Yeah, like, I don't think that's ever happened before.
Correct. And so that's going to be the part about this is, okay, where does the line kind of sit with regards to how you balance that? And I don't think there's a perfect answer for it. You're mm-hmm. always going to run the risk of injury. That's
right.
Just, it's a violent game. Guys are hitting each other with armor on. Injuries happen.
Yeah.
can you avoid as many as possible? That's going to be the key.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's one of those interesting things, and obviously both of these programs have got to be careful with that. We're going to check in at Utah State with Scott Girard at 11 o'clock. I'm interested to get kind of his take on what's going on with the Aggies as they kind of rebuild things up there in Logan. But we're going to switch over and talk a little Utah Jazz coming up next. The NBA schedule is out. If you want to know where the Jazz are playing, you can find out, and we'll talk about some of the highlights of that coming up next right here on The Saturday Show. Welcome back to The Saturday Show here on 97.5 FM, the KSL Sports Zone. This is The Saturday Show. Michelle Bodkin, Jake Hatch, along for the ride on this Saturday morning. Thank you to all of you for tuning in. All right, Michelle, it is August. That means it's NBA basketball time. No, it's not. It's not.
it's a little early, it feels like.
It is. But
it's coming fast.
They want, speaking of the NBA, so badly to be like the NFL, where literally it dominates headlines year-round.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what month, what day, there's NFL headlines out there. And the NBA has endeavored to do that. And the NBA has become that. Trust me. They stay relevant all year long. The one month it feels like that they do kind of fall off the radar is August. So what did they do? They adjusted and announced the NBA schedule in August.
Yay!
It's kind of funny how everything shakes out. But biggest things from the Jazz schedule announcement, I'm just pulling this up. I got Ben Anderson, who obviously is our Jazz insider, does a great job with this, and he had a great breakdown of it. Biggest note about the Jazz, I don't know if you saw this, Michelle, Sunday home games for the Jazz in the regular season for the first time since 2001.
Wow, really? It's been that long.
So the way it was explained is that the NBA required all teams, including the Jazz, to submit 4 possible Sunday home game dates in their schedules. Like, because obviously these venues, speaking like the Delta Center and these venues, they're scheduling concerts. They got monster trucks coming through, Disney on Ice. You know, like the whole
thing. Yeah.
And they had to submit 4 dates that they could potentially play a Sunday home games. It was just an NBA mandated deal. Like, this is not singling out Utah. Trust me. The social media reaction was, what about me?
Calm down,
yes.
Just take a breath. It's fine.
So they submitted 4 dates. 3 of them were picked up. So the Jazz will play 3 Sunday home games, and they have not played a Sunday regular season home game since 2001. They've played playoff home games, obviously.
Okay, that must have been what I was thinking
of. There's a famous thing about Larry Miller. When they had those Sunday home games, he wouldn't go to the games. Mm-hmm. He actually took, was it Gene Wojciechowski during the finals one time? I think one of the preeminent, and they actually went for a drive up like Mirror Lake. So kind of funny how that shakes out. But that's kind of the big thing, is that there's going to be a little different. I'm actually okay with it if it can help balance the schedule, meaning that you don't have as many back-to-backs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are 13 back-to-backs on this schedule for the Jazz. The NBA's tried to get away from these athletes playing too much and too little in a way.
Right.
We had David Locke on with DJ PK yesterday talking about this, and David said, all right. And the question was asked essentially, okay, how do you guarantee load management's not going to affect the NBA to a negative thing? David said this. He's like, okay, let's look in the case of Zion Williamson, for example. Oft injured. When he's on the court, phenomenal basketball player.
Right.
But the problem is he plays every other game. So David's like, if you're a fan, he used this as an example. If you want to see Zion Williamson play in person, and the Pelicans, not Hornets, are coming to Salt Lake City. He said, make sure you check that schedule and look and see if the Pelicans are playing the day before, maybe even the day before that. And that should tell you, like, okay, maybe this is the game that, or if it's on the front end of a back-to-back, he's likely to play that. He's not going to play the back end.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, that's kind of the give and take as an NBA fan. If you want to see these stars,
you got to time it right.
Hope that the schedule works out.
Yeah. That's a bummer. That is a bummer that it's getting to be like that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's what these guys are getting paid for, is to be seen.
Sure. And, okay, here's the thing. I will give all the credit to guys like LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Devin Booker's this way as well, who they kind of have an old school mentality. They understand that there are families and kids in particular who they may get to go to one game a year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, their family can afford to go to one NBA game, and they've got their favorite player. And they're going to go buy that ticket. They're going to spend all the money on concessions, traveling to the game, all that stuff. And if that guy doesn't play, how big of a bummer is that?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a big deal.
So that's so I appreciate guys like LeBron. And if they're injured, they're injured.
Right. Yes. Let's be very clear about it. If you are legitimately injured, like, by all means, sit out. Like, you have no business being out there. But, like, this day on, day off crap, no.
Load management.
Yeah, whatever.
So that's going to be the interesting part about how this season shakes out for the NBA. Because I do think the NBA, like, this is just my personal suspicion, is that Adam Silver and the NBA main office there in New York, they'd love nothing more than for their stars to play every single night, because it brings the attention to the league that they so much desire. Mm-hmm. College football games of just random teams routinely, in terms of TV numbers, outdo high-level NBA games. And that obviously the NBA, they're looking at new media rights still coming up. And,
yeah. Oh, boy, more media rights.
Oh, yeah, it's great. Let me tell you. Hey, is this one going to be as scrutinized as the Pac-12 one? Highly doubt it, but that's okay. But the thing is you want your stars playing games. The nice part is the Jazz schedule, just bringing it closer to home, feels like it's got some decent opportunities to see those stars playing against the Jazz. The other thing is that new in-season tournament is also taking place. Mm-hmm. I am genuinely curious about how that's going to be received by NBA fans.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they need to do something, because, like, I think I've said it before, I think the NBA is very soft. And it's when I look and watch clips of, like, 80s and 90s basketball versus what I watch on TV now, like, no. like it's not a good product. Yeah. It's not. So they gotta do something to, you know, fix that and get that on the right track while being conscious and, you know, making sure that guys aren't getting hurt and some of that kind of stuff. Like, I mean, you have to be as careful as you possibly can, especially with how much you're paying them.
Sure.
You don't want guys hurt all the time, but, like, at the same time, they need to be playing, and the product needs to be good, and it's not good when you have stars sitting out or missing some of these big events that you set up. Like, nobody wants to watch a big event and not see, like, LeBron James play, you know?
And that's the thing about this. I wonder how stars, LeBron James, of that ilk, like, we're talking the top-level guys. Because what it is this in-season tournament, it features four, they're calling them, what are they doing? They're sort of like group play type of deal, like a World Cup type format. And there are going to be eight teams out of that. They're going to make a single elimination tournament with the final down in Las Vegas. There is money attached to this, because it's really the only way you're going to incentivize guys to play this.
Right.
$500,000 for each member of the team that wins it.
Sign me up.
For some guys, like LeBron, who's making
right, he doesn't care about $50,000. Or I don't necessarily $500,000.
If LeBron's able to go, he'll go. He loves playing hoop. That's the thing about this. But, like, for other guys, end of the bench guys, $500,000 added onto their salary is a pretty nice addition, because some of these guys are making 1.5 veteran minimum type deals. Like, you can add $500,000 to your thing, you're going to be okay with that. I'm just interested to see how it's received, both by the players and then how fans look at it. Like, are they going to be like, all right, this is cute and whatnot? Or are they going to actually be like, oh, okay, this is actually kind of a fun diversion, because this is happening early in the season.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Jazz, let's see, tournament play, they play the Grizzlies on November 10th in Memphis. Then they play Portland November 14th. Suns at home November 17th, and then the Lakers on November 21st. Those are their four group play games. After that, then the tournament kicks off down in Las Vegas. The final four teams, will play a tournament in the neutral site in Vegas beginning December 7th, and the winning team wins $500,000. I'm just interested how this is going to, if it's going to increase the attention on the NBA, like, in terms of drawing eyeballs to it, because that's right in the height of the college and NFL seasons. Like, and the NBA's fighting for any and all eyeballs they can get at that point. I'm just interested to see, okay, are the players going to buy into this? If they buy into it, it'll change how it's perceived by the fans.
Totally. Yeah, I think that's the big thing. I think if there's no player buy-in, if guys don't care to play, like, guys that matter don't care to play, then I don't think fans are going to care. Like, I know I certainly won't watch it. Like, so, well, or even, I mean, like, obviously I'll pay attention to it and know some things because it's my job, but like, am I going to sit and watch that on top of like the college football and even the college basketball that's starting that I need to be paying attention to? No.
And that's the tough part about this. The Jazz did pick up, let's see, they got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So they got 8 national TV games, including NBA TV. So you have 1 ESPN game, 1 TNT that are scheduled right now. Those are a home game on Friday, November 17th against Phoenix. That's part of that play-in tournament. And then the Lakers game, the final group play game, is going to be on TNT. So you're going to be on a national stage. And the hope is that the Jazz are playing well.
Mm-hmm.
With the Phoenix Suns, you got Bradley Beal, KD, and Devin Booker. Hopefully, they're all rolling. The Lakers have Anthony Davis, who they just signed to a contract extension, Michelle, that's going to average $62.5 million annually. Just crazy numbers. Hopefully, he's going. Hopefully, LeBron's going. Hopefully, you have these stars playing, because that's what you need to build this into something.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not, if the Greg Popoviches of the world are throwing out, hey, we got anybody in the G League that wants to come up and play in this? That's the mentality they take.
Yeah.
It's going to flounder.
Oh, yeah. No, it's not. It's not going to do well. People aren't going to be interested. It'll get minimal coverage.
Yes.
Because there's other more important things going on where the actual stars are playing.
Yeah, so the Jazz season is going to start officially Wednesday, October 25th against the Sacramento Kings. They will stay at home for the second game with the Clippers coming into town. By the way, another shift, one other thing I should mention here with the Jazz schedule. Friday and Saturday games with some exceptions, though, home games in particular, 7:30 starts, not 7 o'clock starts. Just a little bit of an adjustment on the schedule that way as well. So some changes coming.
Well, we'll see if they work out.
Sure, and... Here's the thing about the NBA season. 82 games is a lot of games.
Oh my gosh, it's so many games.
And I've been a proponent of cutting down the regular season. Okay, and here's the reason I say that is if you're going to have the Kawhi Leonards, the Paul Georges, I don't know, go down the list of those guys who routinely sit out for load management cases. They're not going to play 82 games. Heck, if they're not even going to play 60 games.
Yeah.
Cut the regular season down. Now, that's never going to happen. I wholeheartedly acknowledge that because, trust me, NBA owners are in the business of making money.
Yeah.
And losing 10 home games from 80 to 60, no.
Yeah, that's a big chunk of change.
That ain't going to fly. You're going to have to make up the shortfall somewhere if that's going to happen. I'm just hopeful. And the other thing is the NBA did implement this year that you have to play, what was it? Christian, you may know the answer to this. They have to play 60 games to be considered for postseason awards?
I think it was 65.
65. Okay. So that's the other thing about this. If you want to be, because trust me, a lot of you guys are about legacy and Kawhi Leonard wants to be considered one of the all time. Like all these guys want to be a great, they want to go to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Well, the way you do that is get the individual awards.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I do like the fact that in the new CBA, you have to play a minimum set number of games to be considered for those awards. Like that.
I think that's good. Like, cause yeah, if you're sitting on the bench every other game, like, no,
you play 41 of the 82,
right? Yeah. No, you don't get to pad yourself and then still get a no.
The only thing that worries me is if we're gonna see instances of like players starting, and you know they'll play like. Well, 15 seconds, then check out of the game.
And that
could be a thing.
When they announced this, it was part of the new CBAs. This is written into the new collective bargaining agreement between the NBA Players Association and the NBA itself. And there were people that are saying, okay, what's going to stop Kawhi Leonard, as you mentioned, from checking into game, tip off, and Ty Lue goes, timeout. All right.
Yeah, there might need to be another clause written in there that you have to play X amount of minutes.
Sure.
As well.
And that was actually the counterpoint some people made. Why make it about games? It should be a set number of minutes in a season. Because that's going to indicate more of, okay, this guy actually played. Like
that is true. Yeah, they may need to rethink that. They really may need to rethink that. Because, yeah, I bet we do see some of that go on.
You're never going to get rid of it completely. Trust me, they find the next thing they can.
Right, yeah, that they can like cheat the system with. Yeah,
I don't anticipate it like ever being perfect because as you mentioned, we're children of the 80s and the 90s and the early 2000s of the NBA when it was a point of pride to be out there. John Stockton is the number 27 games in his 18-year career that he missed, and 14 of those were for a knee meniscus surgery that he had at one point. Like Dude did not miss games.
Yeah.
It was a point of pride during that era. Now, this is a different era of the NBA.
Totally different
era. I get that. And I just, there's part of me that's like, okay, get out there and play, but they've got a lot of money and they have a lot of power that they can wield.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's ultimately what happens, though. When people yield a lot of money, there's a price to be paid for that. Like, because now they have control and say over, and that's not entirely a bad thing.
Sure.
But when it tips the scales to that level and that degree, it's maybe a problem.
It does. So interesting stuff all the same. Excited for it. By the way, the Jazz have announced that they have plans. They're going to have that new streaming app up and running in time for the season as well. You can get all games over the air. KJazz 14. They're going home to the channel that was built for. Come on. When you're named KJazz, come on. That's...
Yeah, you got to have some jazz games on KJazz.
And they're gonna carry all of them. That's the fun part about this. So I got to give mad props to Ryan Smith and Smith Entertainment Group, because for them to do that, they're going to take a hit financially on that, Michelle. Like they could have signed another media, broadcast deal with a regional sports network or something like that, like they have had, for millions of dollars. They decided, you know what, we'll bite the bullet on that end, and we're going to get this exposed to all Jazz fans.
Yeah.
In theory, all three, are we at 3.5 million residents of the state of Utah now? Something around that number.
Yeah, something like that.
In theory, all people in the state of Utah should be able to watch Utah Jazz this season, either over the air or via this streaming app. And that's going to go a long way, I think, to building more, I guess, goodwill.
Right.
We'll see. It'll be interesting. I'm also interested to see how this Jazz team responds, because last year they were pretty plucky. Like they played well, and they did shut it down toward the end of the year to try and secure draft positioning, that type of stuff. This is the year, I think, where you start, okay, what pieces do we actually have?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you brought in John Collins from Atlanta. You already have Lauri Markkanen, who is an all-star. You have some of these young bucks. By the way, Bryce Sensabaugh as well as Keontae George were both cleared to resume on-court activities this week for the Jazz, which is positive news. Keontae George was like the star of the summer league.
Right, until he got hurt.
Injured his ankle, yeah. And they're like, okay, you're done. Like, he was single-handedly looking like he was going to lift the Jazz to a summer league title. And a summer league title is whatever, but he was balling out.
Well, that's what you want to see, right? That's why you draft these young guys.
Yeah.
And so to see him producing so early and so dominantly, like, you have to feel good about that if you're in the Jazz front office and you made that choice.
Yeah, well, yeah, every draft pick is obviously it's a high stakes wager, because you're betting on a potential of a guy. And Keontae George very much looked the part. The nice part is it looks like there will be no restrictions on him in particular going into training camp, and he in theory should be able to kind of go out there and do his thing. And this is a season to see, okay, where do all these pieces fit, and where are you still deficient, and. It's a roster building process the Jazz are going through, but it feels like this season could go a long way towards fast tracking it, or really exposing, okay, maybe we thought we were better than we were at that.
Right.
So interesting times, but looking forward to it. 82 games to come, and 50th year of the Utah Jazz as a franchise.
Wow.
If you have not been listening to Jake and Ben, by the way, they've been doing this. They're doing the top 50 Jazz players in history. They've done the first three, and the first three were, number 50 was Rodney Hood. Number 49 was Ricky Rubio. And then number 48 was Bobby Hansen. And they got number 47 yesterday. Nice connection to state of Utah. Nate Williams. Obviously, Natalie Williams played high school basketball here, went on to do incredible things in her own career. But Nate Williams is a member of the Jazz. So some fun names. Blast from the past. Let's just put it that
definitely,
way.
Definitely.
All right. Good time. So make sure you tune in to that. It's 11:30 every single day on Jake and Ben when they announce a new member of the Jazz 50. So top 50 players. All right. We will take a timeout. We'll come back on the other side. We'll get to technical fouls coming up at 11 o'clock. Scott Girard is going to join us from Utah State and their scrimmage up there. More to come. This is the Saturday Show right here on 97.5 FM, the KSL Sports Zone. Welcome back to the Saturday Show. As you heard, it is time now for technical fouls. All right. I'm going to have Christian start off, because this one's like the most timely of the bunch. So, Christian, go ahead and fire away.
We're going to go with Jimmy Graham today. Mm-hmm. He was arrested last night, I believe, in Los Angeles.
Correct.
Because they're getting ready to play the Chargers for a preseason game.
He's with the New Orleans Saints now.
Yes, Jimmy Graham is back with the Saints. At one point, looked like he could be one of the greatest tight ends of all time. Considerably slowed down the last couple of seasons. He was actually out of football for a whole year, I think. Anyways, now he's back with the Saints. Second stint. Looked like he was going to revitalize his career. But he was arrested for, I think, wandering in the streets, and they assumed he was under some sort of substance. And then he resisted arrest as well. So,
and this just came out literally just seconds ago from Adam Schefter from ESPN saying, this comes from the New Orleans Saints. New Orleans Saints tight end Jimmy Graham experienced a medical episode last evening, which resulted in him becoming disoriented. He was taken into custody by local authorities and transported to a local hospital for evaluation by what Dr. John Amos believes to be a likely seizure.
Wow.
Okay.
I don't proclaim to be a medical expert, but seizures don't have you wandering aimlessly around the streets and then resisting arrest from officers as they're trying to take you into custody. But,
not
okay.
Not that I'm aware.
So, yeah. You know, interesting. But we'll see. Interesting situation all the way around. Interested to see where it ultimately goes. Because you're right. It felt like at one point Jimmy Graham was on his way to being one of the all-timers. And he's still a very, very good tight end. All right, Michelle, where are we going?
Okay, so I was going to do something else, but I just found this, and you know what? Why not? Like, let's jump onto making fun of Colorado.
Well, I was going to say this is one I was going to bring up if you didn't.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so Coach Deion Sanders was apparently very upset about a fight that took place in camp, but it wasn't because the players fought. It's because they didn't fight.
Yep.
Yeah, I get it. I get you want like a little chippiness in your guys, but like I don't know that you really want them getting involved in the kind of fist fight that it looked like that was. Like that was a bit much.
There were offensive linemen getting into it. It was a running back that got thrown to the ground or something like that, if I recall correctly. But
oh my goodness!
The quote he used is, "I seen two of you walking off over there, and you've got a teammate fighting." Sanders groused, "Where are they at? Where they do that at? Not here," his players replied. "If one fights, we all fight. You understand that? I don't want to see you all walking off when somebody else is fighting. Never again." Okay.
Like, Coach, like that's how you have guys thrown out of a game.
Bingo. We had Yogi Roth on with DJ and PK yesterday. Asked this about. So he's saying that he wants his entire team thrown out together?
You know what? Forfeits all around. Let's go. Again, like. You want them to be tough guys for sure. But you want them to be smart tough guys, and that's always something that I remember from my soccer days too. My coach always would say, you know, if you didn't agree with like a foul or something,
sure,
like be angry about it, but like be angry in a smart way that you get back and like you score a goal or you get the steal or not something that's going to get you fouled again or thrown out of the game or like use the anger to motivate you in a smart way, not a dumb way.
Channel it positively.
Yes.
And this is not.
No.
I can see where Sanders is coming from. He's trying to keep his team engaged and obviously build team camaraderie. But when it comes to like actual fist fights.
Yeah, I don't know that you encourage that.
I saw a fist fight at BYU football practice earlier this fall.
Well, and I've seen a fight or two up at Utah's camp back in the day.
Coaches don't want they don't want full on punches being thrown.
No,
because first off, throwing a punch at a helmet is just beyond stupid. But they don't want they like the pushing and shoving. They like the guys jawing at each other. But when it turns,
yeah, when it starts like getting serious, like no,
that's where you got to be able to stop. Because and Kalani, so the day we were there was media observation. I know Kalani in his head is like, great, I got to talk about this. But he comes up, he's like, here's the thing: we got to be smarter about that. We got to be able to train our guys. You want to push to that level, but there's a line you don't cross. And throwing a punch, that's crossing that line.
Mm-hmm.
So
that gets you again. It gets you thrown out of a game.
Exactly. It hurts your team.
Yeah.
It hurts your teammates. Like, I can see where Deion's coming from, but this one was probably not that hill to plant that flag on, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No. I think you ultimately cause more problems than you solve with the stance that he took on that.
One quick one, real quick.
I got to give a technical foul to James Harden. I don't know if you've seen his media rounds he's making this week. He was in China and saying, Daryl Morey is a liar and I will never be a part of an organization he's a part of. Let me say it again. Daryl Morey, who is the Philadelphia 76ers GM and I think VP of player personnel, who's like his boss, is a liar and I will never be a part of an organization he's part of. He's trying to force his way out of Philadelphia. Then he did like an exclusive with some radio station in Houston, of all places, saying that this is not the way to do this, James.
He's lost his damn mind. Oh. Can I say that? Is that okay to say? he's just out of his mind.
Well, okay, and then, of course, you know who weighed in on this, right?
Oh, no.
Kyrie Irving, because Kyrie's got to have his say.
Pot meet kettle.
So he responded to a tweet on X, aka Twitter, from Adrian Wojnarowski saying, is he really disgruntled, Adrian, or is he holding Daryl Morey accountable for his dishonesty and lack of transparency throughout the contract negotiation process this summer? Harden's been looking for a long-term contract. It's like,
oh, Lord.
Okay, guys, you know. Fun times.
You know, the NBA may not bring the drama on the court anymore, but they certainly bring it off of it. Let's go with that.
It's a soap. Mark Stein has a hashtag this league. It is a soap opera. There's no doubt about it. And you have guys like James Harden here and Kyrie Irving. They can't help but add to it.
Oh, no. No.
All right. So it's good. That was a good list of technical fouls. I thought it was a fun one. All right. We will come back on the other side. We're going to go up to Logan and check in at Utah State. Scott Gerard up there, obviously, with Utah State scrimmaging this morning. We'll check in with him next. This is the Saturday Show right here on 97.5 FM, the KSL Sports Zone.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5 FM, the KSL Sports Zone. Michelle Bodkin, Jake Hatch here, and we are going up to Logan right now to check in with Scott Gerard. He is, of course, the play-by-play voice of the Utah State Aggies, and, of course, a host here on Hands and Scotty every single weekday. Scotty, how is Logan this morning?
It's a beautiful day up here in L-Town. How are you guys doing? You know, look, about 80 degrees. Oh. Scrimmage at noon. That's the benefit of being up here a little bit north. It's always a few degrees cooler, and stadium's ready to go. Let's kick off football season, guys.
Well, so Scotty, give us kind of a rundown. What is this Utah State team looking like at the moment?
Well, that's Michelle. That's the million-dollar question. I think, you know, there, and I guess that's kind of the day and age that of college athletics that you're living in right now. That you just There's going to be, I don't care if you're P5, I don't care if you're G5, there's going to be a decent level of turnover from year to year. And Utah State got hit with the turnover bug a little bit as far as the roster goes, especially on the defensive line and at the linebacker position. But they do return a lot of really good players. Cooper Legault back at quarterback. And, you know, when he was the starter last year, he went 5-2 and got the team back into bowl eligibility. You've got a good group of wide receivers. You've got Ike Larson, who might be the best player on this entire Utah State roster, back in safety. So there's a lot of key players back. I think the offense should be good. Blake Anderson takes over play calling duties, something that he's really familiar with. And this offense is going to be a little bit more up-tempo. They're going to get after it a little bit more, be a little bit more aggressive. And defensively, you welcome in a new defensive coordinator with a lot of new faces. So offense, I think, is going to be really good. I think there's still some questions on the defensive side. But, you know, that's what a lot of teams are facing right now in college athletics. They're not exactly quite sure what they have, but we'll find out here in a couple weeks.
All right, Scotty, so you talk about Blake Anderson taking over play calling duties, and he doubles, obviously, as going to be head coach, and he'll be the play caller on the offense. Do you feel like he is looking to do that because he wants to kind of reinvent this offense in his own mind? Like, what's the impetus for him doing that?
It's a good point, too. I think when the old OC decided to pursue some other opportunities, and I think it was a mutual understanding that it was probably best for him to move on. The offense got a little stagnant late. They just had so many playmakers 2 years
sure.
ago.
Yeah.
You know, Derek Wright, who's still in an NFL camp. Devin Tompkins, who might make the final 53 in Tampa Bay with one of the greatest wide receiver seasons in the history of the Mountain West Conference. Like, they were just loaded offensively 2 years ago. And then they took a step backwards in terms of personnel last year. And the offense really struggled. And so Blake Anderson looked at it as an opportunity to get, back to his roots as a play caller. And his early years when he was a head coach at Arkansas State, he did both. He was the play caller and the head coach. And then it's well documented, his wife battled cancer and ultimately passed away. And during that time, he needed to scale back his workload. And so he hired an OC to be the play caller as he still maintained head coaching duties. And at that point, he just kind of kept with that. But all along, he always felt like eventually he'd get back to being a play caller because that's ultimately what he loves to do. And so he used this as an opportunity, seeing some issues on offense that he wanted to address and said, who better to fix it than me? And so he decided to take it over. And I think that his roots as a play caller and what he wants to run and the aggressiveness in which he calls plays, I think is going to be a big opportunity for Utah State to really accelerate this offense and try to take it to another level.
Now, Utah State's been shrouded in a little bit of controversy, has had some turnover at the AD. I know some
school president,
people have been a little unhappy with Blake Anderson as of late as well. How is the team dealing with that? And what do you feel like the mood is up in Logan these days?
Well, yeah, and you know, it's certainly a fair question to ask because, I mean, it's something that's been a conversation for quite some time up here. And it's something that this team has is certainly unified and rallied around Blake Anderson. And if there's one thing that you talk to a lot of these players, they've given full support to Blake Anderson and the staff. Now, I think that you've got a new athletic director who will start on Monday. She's flying in today. She came in for a press conference. She's had a bunch of meetings here and is really actively involved in all the realignment talk and all that stuff. But her first day is Monday. Just met the president for the first time just about an hour ago at a function. And they are committed to not only, you know, obviously winning, but also winning the right way. And they want to make sure that this is a program that avoids any situations or any accusations or any problems that they may have had in the past. That is something that they certainly want to address and move on from. So it is certainly a huge point of emphasis with the new leadership here at Utah State, both at the top and at the athletic director front as well.
You mentioned the turnover roster-wise, Scotty, and this world of NIL is just so topsy-turvy. Michelle and I have talked about this plenty with BYU and Utah and our spheres, and I know that Gary Anderson is part of the NIL collective that's running things up at Utah State. Do they feel like they have established enough of a foothold where they can still be competitive in the NIL sphere, or has it still got work to do?
I think everybody's got work to do.
Sure.
But to your point, it is something that's gotten a lot better. I think that over the last 3 or 4 months in particular, Gary Anderson's partnered up with Jim Lobb and his son, Eric Lobb, who, you know, if you don't know who Jim Lobb, he's the owner of Cache Valley Electric.
Yes.
And has been a significant donor and, essentially is the Spence Eccles of Utah State University, has just had a huge role in the development financially of Utah State for a lot of years. And they have developed a collective that is unified. There were a lot of like little mini collectives that were trying to come together, and this is one that's kind of unified them all. And they've been able to fundraise into it. And now I think that they're in a more of a competitive place in the Mountain West Conference. There at first, I mean, it was, you know, if you're not quick and you're not early, you're going to lose out. And I think Utah State missed out on some recruiting opportunities, especially on the basketball front. And that's interesting, too, because while a lot of the country has gone all in on football, a lot of Mountain West schools are actually pointing a lot of their attention collective-wise to basketball. You look at New Mexico and UNLV, traditionally two very poor football programs, and what they've done is like, okay, wait a minute. Can we fund 15 players or can we fund 85 players? And they've gone all in on basketball. And so while the rest, especially at the P5 level, a lot of collective money is flowing into football, and it is a little bit in the Mountain West, but really a lot of Mountain West schools have turned their attention and say, what can we be really good at? And it's been basketball. Okay. And I think you're going to see some, you know, San Diego State's obviously already great, but I think you're going to see UNLV and New Mexico start to make some jumps because they are putting some silly, stupid money into their basketball programs. So it's just, it's funny how different, I know that wasn't part of your question, but it's just funny kind of getting a different direction on how different teams and different programs are handling this. But to, you know, to your point, Utah State's getting better, and I think right now they're probably upper third or middle of the pack in the Mountain West in terms of money that they're able to help out their players with.
Now, Scotty, you're up in Logan to check out Utah State's scrimmage today. You know, what do you think the Aggies need to accomplish today? What are some things you want to see them check off the list?
That's a great question, Michelle. And it's, you've been to enough scrimmages to know that it can be fool's gold because an offense can just fly right down the field.
Scotty, you're kidding me. They're not gonna you know, do everything they're supposed to do in a game.
Yeah, exactly. but you know, the thing that I always like is when somebody will say, wow, man, that offense looked really great. Well, why did the offense look great? Oh, because maybe the defense wasn't that good, you know? And if you go ones versus ones and one side of the ball does extreme, you know, does far better than the other, yeah, you can celebrate that to a certain extent, but then you're also like, ooh, well, wait a minute, that may not be a good sign as well. So I want to see more out of the defense. First scrimmage was pretty offensive heavy. Offense did a tremendous job, and defense got it going a little bit later in the scrimmage, but I want to see defensively this Utah State perform a little bit better, especially on a front line standpoint. That's where they had the huge turnovers on that defensive line, and they need to be a little bit more stout against the run. They need to be a little bit more improved in getting after the quarterback, and so those are the things I think Utah State certainly needs to see in this scrimmage today.
All right, so obviously Cooper Laga is going to be the guy at quarterback, at least it looks like to that. You can correct me if I'm wrong there, Scotty.
Nope, but you are right.
He is a guy that he's just a hard-nosed football player. And you know as well as I do, he was a state champion wrestler at Orem High School. And my favorite thing about him is he plays football and just he's tough. And what does he need to improve upon the most to really, I guess, make that transition to being a star, if that makes sense?
Accuracy needs to be a little bit better. Decision-making needs to be a little bit better. He's a guy that does the, you know, first look, not there, take the ball and run.
Got it. Okay.
And, you know, a little bit of – and when I make this comparison, please know I'm saying it loosely, but a little bit of Taysom Hill where accuracy may not be great, incredible athlete, looking for the first route, not there. Okay, I'm going to trust my legs because it's third and four. Instead of checking down to route two or route three, I know I can pick up the first down by myself. And I might miss out on a bigger play, but I know it'll be the safe play. He got a little banged up as the year went on too. And he fully admitted, I got to be better. I got to be smarter with how I make my decisions and when I decide to run the ball and how I attack from that standpoint. So those are things that obviously he's going to address. He just needs to be – I hope this makes sense. He's an elite level athlete. He needs to be a better quarterback, if that makes sense. And I think he's got it well within his ability to do it. I know he's spent a lot of time this summer working on decision making, on accuracy, on the understanding of the offense. I think you're going to see a much better Cooper Laga in terms of being an all around better quarterback in 2023. He certainly has all the tools, but. Look, they had an open competition in spring. They, you know, they really liked Levi Williams, who they brought out of Wyoming. They gave him a lot of opportunities in spring, and he shut the door on it. There was no chance that anybody was going to take that job away from him in spring, and so he's had all the number one reps. Keep in mind, though, I would say this: Levi Williams will probably get some Nate Johnson-like packages where he'll have some opportunities maybe in goal line and third down. He's just a great runner. If this guy could throw the football accurately, consistently, he's got the same frame and the arm strength as a lot of great quarterbacks. He needs to work on his accuracy, and that's got a long ways to go. But McKay Hillstead, keep in mind, if heaven forbid, if something were to happen, they love the development of McKay Hillstead. I know you you followed him in high school. Coach just said he put on about 15 pounds of muscle. He's gotten bigger and stronger in the offseason because he graduated early. So he's been up here in spring and summer, and they've got a great weight program up here. He has really developed. They love his future here at Utah State. So, you know, heaven forbid if something were to happen, it wouldn't surprise me if McKay got some opportunities.
Scotty, you've mentioned a couple of times that the defensive line is really kind of an area of concern for this team. Who do they need to step up and start making bigger plays on that defensive line in order to give them a shot?
Well, one of my favorite players, and you know this, well, both of you know this, covering your teams closely, is you get to know these guys as people. And so when I say I'm a fan, I'm not talking about just being like a fanboy of a team, but just a fanboy of individuals. Holly Mutuapuaka is just a really tremendous person and a tremendous player. He has big aspirations of playing in the NFL. And I think it's certainly something with his size and his skill level that could be a possibility for him. He has to be not only a run stopper and a gap filler, an offensive lineman eater, which he's been, and allowing linebackers to run free. There's a reason why BYU wanted A.J. Vongpachong so much, is because he had 100 tackles every year he plays, and he'll probably have another 100-tackle season at BYU because he was able to roam free and make big tackles. And a lot of the reasons why was because of Holly. Holly needs to not only do that, but he also needs to show the ability to get after the quarterback as well and pressure the quarterback and really collapse a pocket, not just hold the line, but collapse a pocket as well. I certainly think he's capable of it, and I think he's set for a big year.
So Scott Gerard joining us, of course, the play-by-play voice of the Utah State Aggies. Excuse me,
Salt Lake Aggies.
Aggies. There we go. At least I didn't say Ogden, right?
They've been trying to get into the. Jake, that's unfortunate.
I'm just saying.
they've been trying to get more presence in the Salt Lake market. Maybe that's just like a brand change that they can work on. It's like the Anaheim Angels of Los Angeles or whatever.
Okay. Yeah. As a guy who married into a family who are a family of Angels fans, that whole thing is a whole nother story that needs to be unpacked at some point. But in terms of the Mountain West as a whole this year, Scotty, it looks like on paper Boise State should return to being one of the more dominant programs in the conference. Where do you think Utah State fits in just kind of the pecking order here with the Mountain West this year?
A really good question. I think a team that could be sneaky good this year is Colorado State.
Okay.
They got hit really hard with a transfer bug 2 years ago, but I love Jay Norvell as their head coach, and I think that he's got them pointed in the right direction. Didn't have the season he thought he'd have last year, but I think they're pointed in the right direction. I think Air Force takes a step back. They've had two really good years back-to-back, a couple 10-win seasons, but they lost their quarterback in Brad Roberts, the offensive player of the year. So Air Force always has that run where they get old and developed, and then they lose those guys, and then they take a step back and slowly build back up. I think it's a build-back year for Air Force. Personally, I don't think they're going to be another 10-win season. They're picked really high. Boise does – look, every year they're picked to win it, and then very rarely do they actually win it. So I think I would put – honestly, I would put probably Boise – I put Fresno probably one, and then I don't know. I'm not real big on San Diego State either. Wyoming could be pretty good again this year, but I'm not quite sure if they're ready to take the next step as well. I think there's a lot of teams that could be in that 10-7 win era, with Fresno right now being probably the best team out of the bunch. But all that being said, I think this is a year where anybody could come out of nowhere. San Jose State could be sneaky good again this year. I know it seems kind of weird to say, but Brent Brennan's built a nice program down there, so I think they could be in the mix. Aztecs could, but I don't think they will, because they don't really care about football down there. It's just about basketball with them. And so, by the way, I'm tired of hearing all this stuff about how San Diego State's the premier athletic program in the Mountain West. Can we stop with that? You made one – look, the basketball run was great. It was great. It was awesome. But this all this realignment talk is not about basketball. It's about football. And San Diego State brings nothing to the table. All San Diego State brings is Hotel Del Coronado, where you can have your league meetings. That's it. That's all they bring. There's nothing else they bring to the table. You got a great basketball program. Yeah, Brian Dutcher's got it. But in the alignment world, what does San Diego State bring? They had a football conference championship game 2 years ago, and nobody showed up. 13,000 people showed up, and about 4,500 of those were Utah State fans 2 years ago. So, look, I understand everybody's salivating over San Diego State, and that's great. It's the California market. Let's just say it as it is. Coaches want to go down there so that they can recruit California. It's a great place to visit, and they got a good basketball program. But don't give me this nonsense about how San Diego State is just this great, up-and-coming, massive program. Nobody in the country spends more money on their athletic programs from student dues and student fees than San Diego State does. It's not a well-funded program. They're heavily, heavily in debt because of building a stadium that nobody ever goes to. It doesn't make any sense to me, but, you know, here you go. I'd put Fresno as far ahead of San Diego State in terms of an overall better program from top to bottom than I would the Aztecs. Sorry for the rant. That's my bad. I apologize.
Well, here's the thing, Scotty. I've got a family connection to San Diego State. There's a student that I'm related to who attends school there right now. And let's just put it this way. They say almost the exact same things you're saying. Like, our student fees pay for everything they got going on. Like,
I think it's 55% of their athletic budget comes from student fees.
They pay a lot. There's no doubt about that. And you're right. They have a nice shiny new football stadium that has no shade.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't know if you saw the opener against last year, Michelle, against Arizona. There was their first game in Snapdragon Stadium. That's what it's called.
Yeah.
People were like passing out from heat exhaustion.
Oh.
It was lovely. Oh. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
Well, terrifying. The old one didn't shield from the rain, so it's fine.
Baby.
Yeah. Oh boy. Never go in the under. Well, you can't because it's not there anymore. Never go into the underbelly of that thing, though.
Oh yeah, that thing's a mess. that and the Aloha Stadium are the two worst stadiums I've ever called a game from.
And they're both gone the way of the earth at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically.
Have they knocked down Aloha yet?
It's not
they
knocked
should.
Down yet. It's coming
I mean, Mother
down.
Nature's trying to do its part.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's rusting and falling
out.
Apart. Yeah.
They had like some big like send off for it because they're going to play in that TC Ching Athletics Complex for the next 2, 3, 4 years.
I was there last year.
Oh, you were there last year. Yeah, you were there. Yeah, I remember you were there. So you were in that, but it's a little bit of a bandbox setup. They're trying to get that new stadium done, but they can't start that until the old Aloha Stadium gets knocked down, and that still hasn't happened.
Yeah. You know those old like portable, like things you used to sit in elementary school because your school was not big enough.
Were you in a portable?
Yeah, we were in a portable calling the game. Yeah.
All right.
With no view of a scoreboard, by the way.
Oh.
Like, I had no idea what the time and score was, which, you know what the score is, but the time, like, yeah.
Kind of important.
Had no view of a scoreboard from it.
Jeez, oh, good times. Well, Scotty, anything else you want to get off your chest real quick?
Nope, all good. Can't wait to get this thing started. Michelle, final score, Utah, Florida. I got Utah 24-17.
I think it's going to be another kind of low, weird score. Probably similar to last year. I'll go 26-21, Utah.
Pig Farmer gets it done, by the way. He gets the win.
Totally.
Yeah.
I would say so. We'll see.
We will see.
That's the fun part about it. We're not too far off, Scotty. We got week zero games next week. So
I know. Let's go.
All right. Well, thanks.
Get those gambling. I mean, no. Let's get those.
The Skittles, Scotty. The Skittles.
Yeah. Let's go. All right.
Thanks again
for
joining us, Scotty.
Entertainment purposes only, kids. Just joking.
Well, thanks, Scotty. We'll talk to you soon. All right.
All right. See you guys. Thanks.
There you go. Scott Gerard checking in from Logan. Scrimmage at noon. I believe it's open to the public, by the way. They have a program that lets people go watch them play football.
That's because they play in the Mountain West.
sure. Yes, that's a good point. But nonetheless, fun stuff all the same and looking forward to season ahead. It's here. That's the best part about this. Football is here. I have 2 weeks of high school football already in the books. And next week, college football. NFL's coming right after that. And away we go, Michelle.
It's going to be fun. There's a lot of storylines. A lot of storylines.
All right, we will get to some of the other storylines that we have not touched on in the sports world coming up next. It's 5 minutes of, that's after the break, right here on 97.5 FM, the KSL Sports Zone. Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5 FM, the KSL Sports Zone. Thank you for tuning in on your Saturday morning, no matter what you happen to be doing. Michelle Bodkin there, Jake Hatch here, and time for 5 minutes of. And Michelle, did you happen to see Mo Diabate the other night for the Cleveland Browns?
I did not watch the game, but I saw the highlights trickling in on Twitter. God, he had a great game.
He looked really, really good. Obviously, he's playing for the Cleveland Browns. They ended up, by the way, we have had a really weird thing. So we've had three preseason games for week two so far.
Mm-hmm.
Two of them ties.
Okay.
We had an 18-18 tie between the Browns and the Eagles on Thursday night. And then last night, the Bengals and Falcons tied 13-13. There's no overtime in NBA NFL preseason. I said NBA, but NFL preseason. Kind of a quirky thing that you have two ties. But, hey, you know.
Let's go.
It's the preseason. Good times. Anything NFL-wise, like former Utah players that the Dalton Kincaid talk aside, because the dude is like the toast
I
of
know,
the town.
Yeah. As far as I can recall from this past week, I think Mo was kind of the highlight.
So far, because there's a lot of games today.
Yeah.
And we'll see how it kind of all shakes out. The Jaguars and the Lions are playing right now. Jags up 3-0 on the Lions. Did you see Teddy Bridgewater's new number?
I actually, you know what? I didn't even realize that Teddy Bridgewater is still making tea in the NFL.
He just got signed by the Detroit Lions. I wish I can pull this up here, Michelle, and show you this. That's Teddy Bridgewater's new number as an NFL quarterback.
Number 50. Okay.
Yeah. The new uniform rules allow a quarterback to pick any number, apparently.
Well,
I don't know who in their right mind would let that happen. That's atrocious.
There were so many complaints, especially from defensive players. Like the linemen were limited to like the 90s and the 50s. And mm-hmm. so many teams have these Ring of Honor deals where they almost like unofficially retire numbers. So they've opened it up. And the other thing about this is if you want to change your number after you've been an established player, let's say, for example, Fred Warner, for example, with the mm-hmm. San Francisco 49ers. When he came into the NFL, he was number 4 at BYU. It's his favorite number.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to wear number 4, but he couldn't do it due to the uniform rules at the time. He wears 54 as a result. If he were to go and change his number to the number 4 now, he has to pay the 49ers and the NFL for every single one of the jerseys that are currently unsold on shelves across the league.
Whoa!
That's so Ravens linebacker Roquan Smith is changing to number 0. I mm-hmm. think his previous was number 18. He's actually hosting an event in Baltimore where anybody with a number 18 jersey can exchange it for a new one.
Oh, that's nice, though.
That's kind of the way to handle if you're the athlete. But yeah, it's kind of crazy stuff. But number 50 as a quarterback made me chuckle. There's only part of me that wanted to see number 99. That would have been awesome.
Well, especially since you get like number 1 all the time, like for a quarterback. Yeah, let's go with the opposite end of the spectrum. Let's go 99.
And the PS, the only like position unit that is still limited on their numbers is offensive linemen. They can only wear the 50s through the 70s still in the NFL.
Ah, once again, so the big guys
the
get
big
no
boys,
love.
The big boys getting screwed all over again.
Buddies.
But it made me chuckle that Teddy Bridgewater
chose. Yeah. You have the freedom to choose any number you want, and he did.
I'm wearing number 50. Okay. And I'm sure the like uniform guy's like, is this a joke?
Yeah. Are you serious, Teddy? Or are you sure?
Are you sure about that? Okay, we'll do it. Yeah, kind of funny. Other thing, by the way, in college football, if you are a coach that's around long enough, sometimes you can have legacy players from your own players show up.
Right.
Nick Saban had this happen this week, apparently. Drake Kirkpatrick Jr., the son of former Alabama DB Drake Kirkpatrick Sr., who signed with Alabama and Nick Saban 14 years ago, Drake Kirkpatrick Jr. has now committed to playing for the Crimson Tide. It's Saban's first legacy player in terms of his own player sending their son to play for him as well.
That's crazy. Yeah, Witt has to be getting close. I mean, technically as a position coach, he's had several.
Sure, yeah.
He has to be getting close to having probably his first legacy that was actually a player when he was a head coach, I would think.
At some point it's going to happen.
Yeah.
It just feels like it's...
provided he doesn't retire.
Okay,
But yeah. Let's put
good vibes out there, Michelle. Utah fans don't want to see him go anywhere. Come on now.
Oh, no. know. I mean, I don't think anyone wants to see him go anywhere. We want him here as long as possible.
And
he
wouldn't go far. Let's also be clear about that.
Yeah, that's also true. He'll still be in the building.
Just saying, but yeah, he is. So this Drake Kirkpatrick Jr. is actually an unranked prospect from Gadsden in Alabama, if I'm not mistaken. Kirkpatrick Sr. played for the Crimson Tide from 2009 to 2011. Therefore, he ended up winning 2 national titles and was All SEC twice. So, bloodlines.
You know who it could be. It could be Ephraim Asiata.
Oh, geez, yeah, that's the one right there.
That's the one right there.
P.S. Ephraim. What a story.
Yeah, that is insane.
To have recovered from that school shooting, and now, and the thing is about this, miracle recovery in many ways, and he's resumed his playing career and looks even better than he did previous to that.
You know, if anyone was going to have a 1% chance and make it, it's an Asiata.
Yeah, so Matt and Ephraim could be that tandem.
Combo.
Interesting. Okay, I'm rooting for that now. I'm all on board with that. It'd be really cool to see that play out. P.S., I showed you the pictures of this in the break, Michelle. Melissa High School in Texas.
Oh, my gosh.
This is about 40 miles northeast of Dallas. And Christian, have you seen the pictures of this high school stadium?
Yeah, it blew me away.
So this school has 1,300 kids. 1,300 kids here in the state of Utah is a mid-sized, if I'm not saying 5A school in the state of Utah, like mid-sized 5A school. They play in a 5A level down there in Texas. They built a $35 million stadium that houses 10,000 fans to play their games in. And I'm not going to lie, it puts multiple college programs stadiums to shame.
Northern Illinois wishes they could.
Yeah. Come on. They have Florida glass windows in the press box for this thing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, I looked at it. I'm like, oh, my goodness. So, good for them.
They always say they do it bigger and better in Texas. In this case, certainly so.
And they have multiples of these. Like, Allen High School, which is in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, is got a very nice one. I think theirs was like something like $50 million. Granted, when they built it, apparently the concrete started buckling on it.
Ooh.
Something like that. They had some issue. They had some structural concern with theirs. But This is happening all over the state of Texas.
Yeah.
This is not just exclusive to the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I think there's one down in the Katy area, down there in the greater Houston area that had one.
I know in San Antonio, because we practiced at a bunch of those places, and they were nice places. Yeah. I mean, they far out kicked anything you'll find here in Salt Lake. Like,
yeah, well, we've got some pretty good, like, in terms of settings for high school stadiums.
Yeah, pretty.
But
like, they're not built like a smaller college campus stadium. Yeah. They're just not.
I was doing a game last night on one of the smallest press boxes I've ever been on, and we were squeezed in there. We had both camera crews from the teams, speaking of Sky Ridge and East, and then us like doing KSL Sports, the three of us, and we were all just like shoulder to shoulder with each other calling. It's just this, on the other hand.
I know.
Right.
Yeah, you'd be spread out, maxing and relaxing.
Jeez. I was stunned when I saw this pop up on the timeline earlier this week, but apparently this Melissa team rattled off 11 straight wins last year after losing their first two, won a state title, and they're considered the top-ranked team in the five. It's called – they have different divisions in the state of Texas. They have, like, multiple 6As, 5As on down the list. They are number one in their 5A division in Texas. So crazy, crazy scenes. And just looking at the picture of this, I'm just like – I need to go see that in person. It's just crazy to me.
We're in Big 12 country now, so there's opportunity.
There's a chance. You got to drive a little bit because this is a ways away from Dallas. But apparently, Melissa, Texas, you can see this, Michelle. It's way up here in the Northeast, outside of like McKinney and Prosper. Apparently, it's kind of the next, like the sprawl of the DFW.
Right.
Going right to Melissa, apparently. So, you know. You can do what you got to do, right? I wonder, do they have, like, was it multiple donors or somebody in the community? Like, I just wonder where they generated the money from.
It could probably go either way, knowing how things roll in Texas. They either have, like, a big, like, oil mogul that donated it all, or they have several, like, smaller, well-to-do that combined. Like, either way, it's not going to surprise me.
Nestled into Collin County, the town of Melissa is listed as with a population of 19,357 in the 2022 U.S. Census, which is almost five times its population from 2010.
Wow.
So half of their city population currently can attend a game.
It's like the growth we've seen in Harriman.
Yeah, in many ways. And by the way, Harriman's got a pretty good setup in terms of stadiums.
Yeah.
So, crazy scenes. Real quick, couple of things. RSL, they were supposed to play tomorrow night, resume Major League Soccer action. They have a hurricane that's bearing down on Southern California. Guess how many times I've been able to say that in my life? Very few.
Yeah.
Crazy weather expected. They're saying they could have historic and horrific flooding, which is never good to hear that being described. But because of that, they have postponed RSL's game at the LA Galaxy, which is scheduled to be played down there in Carson. It's been pushed back to October 14th. RSL gets now be four more days off, and then they head to Houston on Wednesday for the U.S. Open Cup semifinal, Michelle. You win that, and what Lionel Messi's doing in Major League Soccer right now is absolutely unprecedented. They haven't lost since he joined Inter-Miami. They have a game, I believe it's Tuesday or Wednesday, against Cincinnati. They win that. RSL wins at Houston. Guess who has Messi coming to Salt Lake City?
RSL!
Yep. So that is the format for that. And by the way, that ticket...
I've heard people have been paying stupid money
hundreds,
for that ticket.
Thousands. Nuts. He's the best player in the world. He scored 9 goals in 6 matches since joining Inter-Miami. He's unstoppable. We all kind of – here's the thing. Anybody who expected him not to be this was up in the night. They were wrong because he's still so, so good.
Well, he's just a different breed, comes from a different level of soccer than what MLS currently is. But I think we've talked about this before. Is there the possibility that MLS starts – taking things a little more seriously and trying to get guys of his caliber in? And how does that help grow the sport here? I think it would be huge.
It would. The other thing about this, I love that he's kind of an everyman in a way. He's got hundreds of millions of dollars in career earnings. He's done a new celebration where he kind of looks – a lot of people think he's calling it hold my cup of beer kind of look. But we found out that it's a celebration for one of his sons. His son is a huge fan of Marvel and Thor right now.
Uh-huh.
So Messi's celebrating a goal right now. He's putting his hand out as if he's calling Thor's hammer. Yeah, Thor's hammer.
Or
I don't even know how to pronounce the name of Thor's hammer. Mohan Janir, whatever they call it.
I didn't realize it had a name.
I have a brother who could – rattle it off in about 5 seconds flat. I should call him at some point and have him explain it to me. But that's what he's doing. He's literally, his son's a big fan of Thor right now.
So, aww.
And he was shopping at a Publix when he showed up in Miami. Just went out thinking, nobody's going to recognize me, the best soccer player. I'm actually more a fan of Messi than I ever have been before now.
Yeah, that's cool that he's so chill.
It seems that way. Could it be a facade? Sure, but it seems like he's a dad who happens to be the best player in the world when it comes to soccer right now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's awesome. I am nothing against Houston, nothing against Cincinnati. Both of y'all get out of the way.
Yeah.
Get Messi to Salt Lake City so I can A, I can be part of the broadcast first off.
Yeah.
And B, so I can see Messi with my own eyes.
Yeah.
Okay? Okay.
See, this is the perks of working in sports. You don't have to pay to be there. You get paid to be there.
Okay. That does help, yes. I'd actually consider paying to see Messi in Salt Lake City. I'm not gonna lie. It's gonna trust me. What is it? It's 20 some odd thousand with standing room only there at America First Field. It is going, if this happens, if this all goes down,
it's going to be insane.
They will set the record for attendance at that match.
Easy.
Book it.
Easy.
They may try and bring in temporary stands in some form or fashion. It is going to be nuts, but we got to get some games out of the way. Inter-Miami's got to win. Real Salt Lake's got to win. Take care of business for us, okay? Okay.
Let's go RSL.
All right. We will take our penultimate timeout here on the show, come back on the other side, get some final thoughts. This is the Saturday Show right here on 97.5 FM, the KSL Sports Zone.
Welcome back to the Saturday show here on 97.5 FM, the KSL Sports Zone. Final segment of today's program, and our good friend Clint O'Pete, Michelle, weighs in. Apparently, James Harden has obviously, we talked about this with Daryl Morey, the Philadelphia 76ers GM. Quote from Harden, every Friday that was going to be pizza day. We had pizza Friday for the first month of the season, but then that was it. It was supposed to be every week, all year long. Is that why he's calling him a liar?
Well, I mean, I would be very mad if someone took my pizza away on Friday. Like, don't promise me pizza on Friday and then not deliver.
Bingo. by the way, I can actually tie that into another thing. We had Lincoln Kennedy on. He comes on, obviously, with DJ and PK throughout the season. And this goes back last year. He was talking about the difference between what he called college coaches and pro coaches. And he talked about Chip Kelly in particular. When Chip went to the NFL, he tried to do what he does. He did it at Oregon. He's doing it at UCLA, where he is judge, jury, and executioner. Like, he is the man. That has full control. That doesn't exist in the NFL. But he tried to do that. And he talked about the fact that some of these college coaches, and he mentioned Chip Kelly by name, come in and take away pizza, like I think he called it, was it Pizza Wednesday? He's like, as he said, quote, I'm a grown-ass man who will determine what I want to eat and when I want to eat it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's largely why Urban Meyer flamed out so fast.
And he mentioned Meyer. I think the question actually was, I think, asked in relation to Meyer when things went south.
And it's actually, I had a conversation with Dennis Erickson about that, about, you know, what makes a good college coach versus what makes a good pro coach. And he said, it's when you're a pro coach, you have to have the ability to just let things go because you are dealing with grown adults and they don't like being treated like children.
Oh, no.
At that point, you know, they're no longer in school. Like you can't really monitor and be like, well, this is what you're going to do. This is what you're going to do. And so that's why you see a bunch of these college coaches flame out, because they think that they can go in and do exactly what they did in college, control everything the way that they do at the college level, at the pro level. And it just doesn't work.
It's just such a funny thing. Like, is that why he's calling him a liar? Because of Pizza Friday? And there's a whole rumors about when he tried to get his way out of Houston, he was wearing a fat suit. You heard about this story?
I didn't hear the fat suit story.
There was and Christian probably knows about this. There were pictures of him that looked, trust me, he
like
looked
ballooned.
Yeah. And there is some speculation that he did that. He wore a fat suit. It wasn't like overtly like,
yeah,
but to get the pictures taken, so we were like, whoa, what happened to Harden? And they expedited his exit at that point from Houston. And there were jokes this week when he said that Daryl Morey is a liar and never play for him. And people are like, all right, here comes the fat suit. I don't know. The James, you mentioned the fact that it's just a soap opera off the court.
Oh, totally.
It's insane.
Yeah, at this point, I think the entertainment comes more off the court than it does on the court.
No doubt. All right, Michelle, any final thoughts from you as we go out the door here?
Utah fans, go up and enjoy Fan Fest this evening.
Oh, yes, good point. Yeah, tonight, right?
Yep.
Rice-Eccles?
Rice-Eccles, okay. 6 to 8.
Sweet.
So, yeah, be there, be square.
And stay away weather, okay?
Yeah, no thunder bumpers, although definitely try and keep it cool because that turf gets hot.
Yeah, well, it's supposed to be, I think we're only in the mid-80s, I think, today. Highway, so that's
I'll take it.
All right, that's going to do it for us. For Christian and Michelle, big thanks to Scotty, by the way, for checking in from Utah State. Coming up next, we throw it back to Fox Sports programming. This has been the Saturday Show right here on 97.5 FM, the KSL Sports Zone.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The murder of two men forces their families to wrestle with impossible questions. Who is forgiveness for? Does everyone deserve a second chance? Follow season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.